Welcome back to the Paula Gordon Show. I'm Paula Gordon. Sue Savage Rumbaugh is our guest, and Bill Russell is here as well. As we went away into a break, we were talking about kids, human children, given access to being fully human by being able to participate, to be a member of the family, of man, if you will. Am I being fanciful to say that you've done much the same thing by going into the ape community and finding that they are responsive, that they have their own language, and we can communicate? Just plain, yes, we can communicate. Doesn't that then give us some responsibility? A, is that true, or am I just being anthropomorphic? And B, if that's true, doesn't that make us no longer other? Don't we then have some responsibilities?
As soon as you acknowledge that the intelligence is there of that complex a sort, then yeah, we have big responsibilities.
And you do acknowledge that?
I definitely acknowledge that. When you open the envelope with a human child by use of a keyboard, and the parents and the church and other people begin to see that this child really has a mind and treat the child differently, you get, as I said, radically different behaviors on the part of the child. The child is now thinking, I can talk to people. I can say that I want this. I can say that I want that. I can say that I'm mad that my brother hit me. Okay, and all these things come out of the child, and you get a ratcheting of effect, and the child is more communicative, and the parents are more responsive, and it goes upward. But with such a child, I don't mean to say that suddenly they become smarter. They still are retarded. And when we were talking about how you have to make sense of the context that's around you, figure out everything that's going on and the relationships, they still have a deficit there. They can't think about as many things at the same time as you and I can, and mm-hmm. they can't put them together as mm-hmm. rapidly as you and I can. And to me, that is an enormous difference between a child who is retarded and can't talk and the bonobos. Between a child who is retarded and has no language and opens the door through a keyboard and begins to talk, and a bonobo who I open the door through the keyboard and begins to talk. When I open that door with a bonobo, I'm not only opening that door for the bonobo and myself, I'm beginning to realize that all these contextual things that are going on around are being put together by the mind of that bonobo in an extremely complex way, much more complex often than the mind of the retarded child who may be even saying more complicated things at the keyboard. And
I'm hearing you say that there is a richness to the experience of the bonobo to which we just have no access. We've never thought about it. We've denied that it's there. I'm hearing you say that you're looking into a whole nother way of being, and you have a little access, and we've a bridge has been built into a whole nother way of seeing.
That's how I feel about it. I've kind of looked through what I thought was a pinhole, and I found an ocean on the other side, and right now I'm swimming around in it, and I don't feel that way.
And they do this without talking?
Well, they talk. They talk. They talk like this to each other, and in the wild, they're reported for sometimes to three or four males will get together, and they'll form a circle, and they'll go. They're all looking at each other, and then they apparently make a decision, and they announce it to the females, and they all come down out of the trees and go off in a particular direction.
And not to just sort of assume that people know this, there is the whole concept of what is now body language that we haven't talked about at all. Do they not communicate visually in space?
Yes, they communicate by bodily postures and by very, very subtle gestures. There are examples in the wild of a male sitting over a female, and he realizes that some other males are kind of jealous of his relationship. And so when some of the other males aren't looking, he breaks off a little leaf and he drops it down in front of her, and she kind of looks up and winks at him. And then they sneak off, and there's a little copulatory bout, and then they come back and sit down.
Copulatory bout is sex.
Sex, right. Yes. And they come back with looks on their faces, though nothing happened.
Who, me? There's another piece of what you're saying. I may be reading too much into it, but it sounds almost as if we are, in some senses, constrained by our language, that we do not see things because we have this tool. It's almost a hammer metaphor. You know, with a hammer, everything looks like a nail. With language, we have, you know, with the language we speak and use, it is the tool we have, and we apply it to everything, and think all understanding has to come from that.
Do you agree with that?
In part, and our language is very object focused. When I began to teach chimps, I taught them concrete words, banana, shoe, key. And when we started working with the retarded kids, we did the same thing, because as scientists, we could hold this object up and test and see if they really understood. Then Marianne and Rose began to learn that, gee, you can teach these kids things like please and thank you. Their parents and the church and the teachers were asking for social function words. Mm-hmm. And we thought, well, how would you, I'm sorry. You know, how would you teach, how do you feel? How would we teach a word like that? But they put them on the keyboard anyway, and the children acquired those words really, really rapidly.
Huh. And I think, as compared to the hard physical words?
Well, they acquired some of the hard, the concrete physical mm-hmm. words too, but they acquired these, which we thought would be much later and very difficult, and they used them appropriately. And the parents liked them very well because they are social regulators. Mm-hmm. Now say please, now say thank you. And you coordinate, we don't realize the extent to which we coordinate our behavior mm-hmm. through this kind of language. But science hasn't really studied the social regulatory function of language. And I think that's a major part of language, talking about locations and social regulatory functions and how we're going to do things together and what it is and who does it when. Like, are you going to eat in that tree first or am I?
You're talking about the apes now, aren't you?
I'm talking about the apes now and how they establish rules for social interaction. I think they do that with something very much like our language. And we've looked for in the field, well, I want them to hold up this fruit and point at it and tell me what the vocalization for it is, and they don't do that.
That doesn't make humans sound very smart, Sue.
Well, I think we're smart. I think we are just bound in by the current confines of our science.
Do you think we can learn?
I think all we have to do is open our hearts and our minds and take in new information and be willing to ask the complicated questions. I think there's no doubt that we can learn. But one of the reasons we don't want to ask the complicated questions is sometimes the answers have very strong social political ramifications for our society.
Which takes me to the bonobos are highly threatened. They live in a land whose landmass is decreasing. The need to conserve is life-threatening to their entire species, isn't it? I mean, you talk about social responsibility. Hello, are we going to wipe out our closest relatives, Sue?
We might. We might wipe out our closest relatives in the next 10 to 20 years.
Mm.
Bonobos exist only in a very, very small part of Zaire.
And in some labs and zoos.
There's less than 100 in captivity worldwide. So even propagation through a small gene pool like that is very iffy.
Yeah.
And in Zaire, right now, hunting apes for meat is become very popular. Bullets have become very valuable. And apes can be killed and put on the boat and smoked, and you can get a little money for the meat of an ape. And
which, of course, we wouldn't allow with humans.
No, we wouldn't. But I learned at a meeting I was at this summer in Wisconsin that a whole 300-mile area of bonobos had just been wiped out in a few months because hunters had come in and just shot all the bonobos. The bonobo range is really very small, maybe something like the size of the state of Texas or something. In Zaire, that's the only place they exist in the world. And if hunters decide to go throughout that range and kill them, as they have, for example, with elephants, they'll just be completely wiped out. And it won't be that there are other bonobos in another place like there are other elephants in another place. I mean, they'll just be gone.
Can we do anything about that?
We're trying really hard to do to get into Zaire and to do education. It seems the problem is not that people want to do this. They don't know. They don't realize that these animals are special, that they don't occur anywhere else in the world. To them, a bonobo is $5 worth of food.
Mm. The context thing.
So there's some social responsibility around our own language on this subject, yes?
Well, that, but, you know, the conservation is a significant issue, but there's also the human quest to know more. These people, these bonobos.
The bonobo people.
have, from what you're saying, have answers to some questions. If we can figure out how to ask the questions that are very important. I mean, I have the sense sometimes looking at Pambanesia, looking at Kanzi, then I'm looking at Lucy.
Lucy.
Yeah, if you look at
say who Lucy is, please. Our common ancestress, to whom there is now an argument made that we all are descendant from one hominid. Is that the right word?
Yes.
Do we need, what more to be said about Lucy?
A million years? 2 million?
This is probably 4 to 5 million years old. She was about 4.5 feet tall, and she did, except maybe for some joints in the pelvic area, and maybe slight differences in her dentition. She looks
her what?
Her teeth.
Yeah.
She looks almost identical to Kanzior Pamanicia. If you saw Lucy on the street, you probably wouldn't be able to tell that she. You probably think she's Pamanicia's cousin.
Now Lucy's skeleton has. I mean, this isn't fabrication. This is a skeleton that has been.
Lucy's in almost the entire skeleton has been recovered and fairly accurately dated.
So we really are pretty close.
Well, and the current
that's going to just freak a lot of people out.
The current consensus is that that is our common ancestor. Now, that may change, but the current scientific, I think that's
well,
correct.
Well, not that it's the common ancestor to us and bonobos.
To us.
Ours.
That it's the
we
human.
As humans.
Right. Right.
Yes. And that individual would look very much like Kanzior Pamanicia and had a brain about the size of Kanzior Pamanicia.
Talk about going out and interviewing your older relatives to preserve that. It seems
well,
to me
to
this is a wonderful
out, yeah,
opportunity.
To wipe them out before we know anything about them. And we've only known about them for 30 years.
Well, the
right?
most critical thing about bonobos is that they're the only species that exists of apes in the wild in large social groups. They may have groups to 40 to 100 individuals. And if you're thinking of going through the rainforest with a group of 100 humans, how do you decide where to go? How mm-hmm. do you decide what to eat? How do you know what tree is going to be ripe?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We can learn a lot about how we survived by studying them. They're also the only ape whose social sexual behavior is very, very human-like. So the dynamics of what's going on in bonobos, plus the possibility that they have something like language. These are things only in the last few years we're becoming aware of. And by the time we get there to study them, they may be gone. And we'll never find the answers to those questions then.
We're going to be back in just a moment for a closing thought from Sue Savage-Rumbaugh. I'm Paula Gordon. Bill Russell is with me. We are at the Georgia State University Language Research Center. We're going to be right back. Stay with us.